This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. Great to have you with us for the Wednesday, July 1st edition of the Noon Business Hour. July already. I'm Jennifer Kuiper in for Cisco Cotto. The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. On today's Noon Business Hour, we will talk about optimistic news on the vaccine front. United is adding flights, and June private payrolls rose, and there was a big revision for May, according to ADP. And on Personal Finance Wednesday, finding money in unexpected places. WBBM News Time, 12:04. The ADP report on jobs in the private sector shows encouraging signs, and we'll cover that in our next segment. Right now, Pfizer has released results from its early-stage human trial on a coronavirus vaccine. We are joined by Michelle Cortez, health reporter, Bloomberg News. She's based out of Minneapolis. Michelle, what can you tell us about this vaccine?
So we do have some good news from Pfizer. It was a pretty small trial, only about 45 people who were in it. But what they found was that those who got the vaccine had a significantly increased number of antibodies that bind to the virus itself and could potentially reduce your risk of becoming infected should you be exposed to coronavirus.
This is just one of, I would imagine, many vaccines that are being worked on. Any idea how many we have out there? And I'm curious as to whether this is more of a largely competitive search for a vaccine or if it's quite a bit of collaboration in the medical field.
Right. Great question. There are more than 150 vaccines that are currently in development. So it is a phenomenal race that's happening. About a dozen of them are in human clinical trials where they're starting just the initial first look at whether people are responding and if it appears safe in the initial trials. And you're right, there is a race and everybody wants to get there. But the idea is that we're going to have to vaccinate the entire globe against this virus. And so every company understands that their vaccine is not going to be enough. It's not like heart disease or cancer where if someone gets one company's product, they're not going to get another company's product. There is plenty of virus to go around. There are plenty of patients. So everyone is really pulling for everyone else. They're not collaborating as much personally or company to company, but there also isn't that the race is not against each other. The race is against the virus.
Is Pfizer working with someone on this? Did I see they're working with the Germans on this?
They are, yes. Yes. So apologies for that. Every company is pretty much working with other people. So there are all of these companies that are happening, like AstraZeneca is working with Oxford University. So the companies are working together that way, yes. But each virus itself, each vaccine itself is on its own.
And Michelle, what's the latest on testing?
Huge numbers of people are lining up to get tested. The problems are that we don't have enough in the areas where the demand is. So we're seeing these surging cases coming across the South, Texas, Arizona, Florida. They're hitting record numbers. And there just literally aren't enough tests in those areas for everyone to get them. So huge lines to get tested. And then there's a lot of controversy over how accurately we're detecting the number of people who are infected. We still only are catching a small proportion of people who have coronavirus.
That's Michelle Cortez, health reporter, Bloomberg News, based out of Minneapolis. Thanks for joining us. Coming up, fresh numbers on private sector employment show an improving jobs picture. The ADP report on private sector jobs shows a rise in June and a positive revision for May. Diane Swonk now joins us with the latest breakdown on the numbers, and she's chief economist with Grant Thornton here in Chicago. Diane, what's the latest on not only the report, but also that big revision?
Yeah, the big revision, somewhat expected because it was so off with what we saw with the official employment data, and it is tied to the official employment data, so it got caught, swept up in that upward revision. I do actually expect to see an upward revision in May and continue gains in June, but now we know this is all backward-looking data. The high-frequency data on both hiring and people going out to restaurants, credit card receipts, we now have an incredible amount of data that we can see on a real-time basis, and that slowed as we moved into June in terms of hiring, and then we also now are seeing the recoil effect as the virus surges again, COVID cases and most notably hospitalization surge, and you're seeing people pull back even before they roll back some of the reopening that we saw going on out there, and that's really important to understand that, you know, this is now a backward-looking report that we're going to see tomorrow, and we shouldn't be popping any champagne corks because we could easily see a decline again in June employment. July employment.
Sure. And according to ADP, who reported the largest hiring gains over the last month?
Well, we are seeing these small businesses come back, which is really important. I think that's an important thing. But, of course, they're also laying off again. And, you know, leisure and hospitality is what tried to ramp up. Restaurants, bars tried to ramp up, and now they're closed again. So all those people that were working are now off payrolls yet again, and that's what's really hard about what we're facing. Dealing with a higher rate of infections than other countries were willing to accept has its own consequences. And what's really interesting about this information is that, you know, what we're seeing going on out there is fear itself prompted people to pull back before any of the states started to deal with the surge in COVID cases and it overwhelmed their hospitals. Just the fact that they started to surge prompted people to start pulling back. And I think that's really important.
Right now, it doesn't seem like it's affecting Wall Street too much. I mean, I'm looking at the markets and mostly the S&P and NASDAQ are up right now. The Dow is only down 1 point. And it was a good day yesterday on the markets. Is this really having any kind of impact on Wall Street at this point, or are they just kind of playing it just loosely?
Well, you know, there's been a lot of excitement about a vaccine. And the problem is, you know, in the most optimistic scenarios, there still won't be enough dosages for everyone by year end. And 6 months is an eternity in an economy, even though it's a breakneck pace for science. And so even the vaccines they're talking about are no panacea because it could be much like the flu vaccine. We need them every year. And the ability right now, what people are saying about the uptake on the vaccine, that may change, is that it's surprising how few people will actually commit to taking a vaccine. Even over 60, it's about 70%, which you would think, you know, people over 60 would 100% want a vaccine given their vulnerability to this disease. But also, I think, you know, what we're missing on Wall Street is the collateral damage to the labor force of these young people getting sick now and getting very sick and hospitalized. Not only is that a cost to them and their health, but we don't know what the long-term effects of this are for the labor force for these young people that are getting sick now. And that's something, the legacy effects of that are very hard for Wall Street to price in.
Diane, what are you expecting to see when the federal government releases its monthly jobs report tomorrow?
Well, we're looking for 2 million with an upward revision to May and net increases of close to 6 million during the 2 months, which would be great, but leave us still in a much deeper hole than we were during the Great Recession of 2008, 2009, and that context is really important. And then we could lose jobs again in the month of July. So, it's just not a time to be popping champagne corks because there's still an enormous amount of pain in this economy. And the collateral damage of secondary layoffs in the state and local governments, July 1st, start of many fiscal year. And we're going to see a lot of cuts in state and local government jobs continue even in the month of June. And that's something to be very concerned about because prior to the crisis, 1 in 8 people in this country was employed by a state and local government.
Always a pleasure, Diane. Thanks for joining us. Diane Swonk, Chief Economist, Grant Thornton here in Chicago. Up next, United Airlines reacts to increasing demand for flights.
Loaning useful information each weekday. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Chicago-based United Airlines and other carriers are now dealing with an uptick in demand, even as COVID-19 numbers continue to rise in much of the country. Let's find out how they're dealing with the situation, and we check in with Joe Schwederman, Professor of Public Services and Director of the Chaddock Institute at DePaul University here in Chicago. And Joe, an increase in flights, but how close is that to pre-pandemic schedules at United?
Well, we're looking at a pretty big news by United that they're going to ramp up considerably, and it looks like they're going to be about 45 to 48% of their normal schedule, or at least last year's schedule in August, which is a big change from today. So there's a sense that we're on that curve of recovery, you might say. And with both American and United making big moves, there's a bit of optimism out there.
How challenging is it, though, for the airlines when it comes to them handling more demand and yet still trying to meet these COVID precautions? And already we're seeing that there was some controversy involving Airlines for America and the CDC.
Oh, it's going to be a tough balancing act. And I think when these decisions are made, you know, a day later, we get news of more outbreaks and beaches closed in Florida and things like that. So it's just, it's hard to predict demand, and airlines have to put their schedules out about a month in advance to give a reasonable chance to fill them up. But Americans really taking some heat for announcing they're going to sell the full flight without, you know, reserving those middle seats or at least allowing for some unused seats like Southwest is doing. And it's coming a little bit ugly with some of the senior federal leaders calling them out, saying it's we're not ready for that.
And the airline industry, I mentioned Airlines for America, basically says, you know, it defended the decision to fill planes. And it says that, you know, maintaining social distance is impossible on planes anyway.
Yeah, I think that's becoming more and more clear. The whole airport experience is a lot of density, and you're better managing the risk rather than tying the airlines one hand behind their back and saying, fly, but you're not going to make any money. It's so difficult out there. Fares are so low. People are canceling trips at the last minute. And so it's really hard to run an airline in this environment. I think in the next week we'll have a better sense of whether American may come up with some compromise solution. They are alerting passengers when their flight's full, allowing them to switch. But there's a lot of labor involved doing that kind of work.
How would you characterize the demand these days, Joe? Is it more slight or moderate?
Well, I'd say it's moderate. The TSA said as of Monday, the people going through security was 25% of what it was last year. That's still pretty low. There again, this week we're seeing a little more good news with everything from Greyhound and airlines adding back flights, and the sense is that August may be okay. We may be up to 50% of our normal levels. Having said that, a lot of us were way too optimistic a few months ago.
Joe Schwederman, professor of public services and director of the Chaddock Institute at DePaul, thanks for joining us. And still ahead, in Personal Finance Wednesday, ways to find money during the pandemic downturn.
This is Chicago's all-news station. News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM and WBBMNewsRadio.com.
Good afternoon. I'm Jennifer Kuiper, and the Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
This is Mike Krauser. The police union boss blames morale for a steep drop in police activity at a time when murders have increased dramatically.
A growing number of states are pulling back reopening plans as they deal with steep increases in coronavirus cases. In Personal Finance Wednesday, we'll delve into the ways to come up with cash during economic turbulence. Also on the finance front, applying for a credit card in the COVID economy. WBBM Business, the Dow right now is up 11 points. The S&P 500 is up 17 points. The NASDAQ is up 80 points. AccuWeather says sunshine mixing with clouds, hot and humid, highs ranging from near 80 at the lakefront to 92 inland, 89 degrees at 12:31. Chicago saw a dramatic increase in murders last month as overall police activity slowed significantly.
Police Superintendent David Brown says the decrease in police activity is the result of fewer people on the streets because of the pandemic. The president of the police union says it's not that simple. John Catanzara told the Sun-Times, it's also about morale and distrust of Mayor Lightfoot. With police seeming to be in the crosshairs with more misconduct investigations, they're being cautious, thinking before acting, he says. Murders were up about 80% in June compared to last year, and arrests were down 55%, street stops fell by 74%, and traffic stops were down by 86%. Mike Krauser, News Radio 105.9 FM.
More states are shutting down parts of their economies as COVID-19 cases grow.
More than a dozen states have paused or rolled back their economic reopenings.
We've had an outbreak.
Delaware is closing its beach bars and holding off on moving to phase 3.
Let us work!
In Texas, protesters came out against the state's decision to close bars. Texas has about twice as many people in hospitals than it did 10 days ago. Surgeon General Jerome Adams says while the country is in a better place to treat COVID-19 than it was just a few weeks ago, that does not mean mission accomplished. Laura Podesta, CBS News.
If you're among the many still working remotely, ask your smart speaker to play WBBM News Radio for all the latest developments. Markets are a little higher. We are joined by Paul Nolte, Portfolio Manager, Kingsview Asset Management. Paul, looks like even oil's up today. What's your take on the markets?
Now, as we start the second half of the year, I think the markets are a little bit encouraged that monetary policy is still pretty accommodative at this point. And we're seeing a little bit better economic data. We got the National Association of Purchasing Managers Index this morning, which was above 50, which indicates that at least manufacturing is expanding. Real estate has also picked up a little bit. So there's some encouraging signs, at least, that the economy is coming back, albeit very slowly.
I took a quick look at the auto numbers. GM sales down 34%. Fiat Chrysler automobiles down 39%. Ford comes out with their numbers tomorrow. That's pretty bad for that sector.
It is, but it is, again, better than what it was the prior month. And that's really what Wall Street looks at, is they take a look at the margin. Is it better or worse than the prior reporting period? And so that's why tomorrow's numbers are going to be really important. The unemployment data that we're going to get on Thursday is going to be kind of key data as far as, is it going to be better or worse than last month?
What's your take? What do you think might we see in this?
We should see a little bit better data. A lot of the weekly data that we're looking at indicate that the unemployment number should tick down a little bit. That being said, we've also seen, as you reported earlier, a lot of states starting to kind of shut down or soft closes, et cetera, and making some changes. So the unemployment numbers haven't improved necessarily over the last 2 or 3 weeks. The unemployment numbers get pulled from mid-month the prior month, so it may not reflect some of the most recent shutdowns of businesses across the U.S.
What about construction spending? It fell, but it doesn't seem like it fell a lot. Is this going to really affect the real estate industry?
It could, and I think really more what's going to impact the real estate industry is people working at home or changing company cultures from having everybody in the office to maybe a rotating basis. So a lot of companies may not need as much real estate, and this is unfortunately not anything we're going to be figuring out today, but it's going to probably take 5-10 years to see that develop over time as companies shift their policies.
Among those hard hit during the pandemic retailers, what kind of Q1 loss has Macy's seen? I'm curious as to what the retailer says about the months to come.
They won't say anything about the months to come. And this is what we're seeing with a lot of companies that are reporting, is they really are not able to say much about their financial outlook. So they did match Wall Street expectations, which was good. They're down about another 3%. But again, they're in the crosshairs of moving online, as many people have gotten used to in the last 2-3 months of ordering pretty much everything online. Macy's has kind of struggled in that space, and it's going to be very important for a lot of retailers to really ramp up their online exposure in order to maintain overall sales.
What about retail as a whole? When you look at the whole industry, you expect a lot more closures or moderate?
It's an ongoing trend that we've seen over the last 3-4 years as people have moved online. If you look at it from a global perspective, the U.S. per capita has an awful lot more retail square footage in the U.S. than many other countries. So it can be easily argued that the U.S. continues to be overstored. And so I think we'll continue to see contraction in the retail space as we go through the next couple of years, and certainly as people are more comfortable online.
And Paul, what are you going to be keeping an eye out for during this earnings season?
Really, it's going to be discussions about what companies are doing as far as dealing with the virus, dealing with their workforce, and as best they can, try to give some forward guidance. It's going to be difficult in this environment, but those are the couple of the things that we're going to be looking at as we go forward. What might they be expecting over the coming months? I think the worst is probably behind us. So it's going to be a matter of how optimistic many of those companies are about the second half of the year.
Paul Nolte, thanks for the update. Portfolio manager, Kingsview Asset Management here in Chicago. Up next, in Personal Finance Wednesday, finding cash in unexpected places.
Download the WBBM Noon Business Hour podcast. Or if you missed only a portion, rewind on the radio.com app.
It is Personal Finance Wednesday. This afternoon, we're discussing ways to come up with cash when times are tough. And we welcome Craig Bolanos, founder and founding partner and chief executive officer with Wealth Management Group in Inverness and Downers Grove. Craig, if emergency cash has run out, we're looking for some cash, where might we find it?
Well, there's so many creative ways, and this is so timely because we're standing on the precipice of possibly having the enhanced unemployment of 600 a week run out at the end of the month. And I think everyone just needs to start by understanding what's the actual shortfall going to be. So I want everybody to create a budget so we know exactly how much money we're going to need to find. And one of the very creative ways to go and find that money is people are aware, but I really want people to think about going out and pursuing a side hustle right now today.
Well, it is a gig economy, so that wouldn't be unheard of, right?
No, absolutely. I mean, I have talked to clients, I've talked to people through the platform of radio, and I've pointed them in that direction. I mean, no one company, no one gig, but boy, there is opportunity out there right now for those that are willing and in a capacity to seize it.
You know, we're always told to stay away from the 401k, let it ride. But is that something maybe people might look to now?
Well, I absolutely think so. You know, one of the things we talked about with clients at the Wealth Management Group during this crisis is the first thing is take a look at your contribution rate. Maybe your contribution rate actually needs to come down. I would rather have people put less money in their 401k as opposed to borrowing money on the side. But let's also be realistic with these gaps of unemployment. I mean, the unemployment rate is so significant today. I do think people in certain circumstances maybe should, can, and borrow from that 401k, but do so sparingly. And some of the rules from the recently passed CARES Act back in March make it a little bit easier to borrow from that plan.
Anything you should be super careful about when it comes to considering a 401k loan?
Well, I think you always need to make sure just because you can borrow X number of dollars and the new limit is up to 100,000 doesn't mean you should, because again, we talk about time and time again on this program, Jennifer, you can borrow for so many things, whether it's college, whether it's this month's rent, but I'm yet to see anybody give people a loan for retirement. So we got to borrow sparingly. And above and beyond that, don't forget just to see if you can get better terms and conditions on any of your current payments. 0% APR cards are out there. Personal loans are out there. We've got to look at the gambit to get through this.
There's some pretty good rates out there. How about refinancing?
I think refinancing makes an awful lot of sense for an awful lot of people. And the wake-up call should be just because you think you have a low rate, you might be surprised at how low rates are. So, but when you refinance, you really need to take a look, not just at the rate. You got to make sure you understand the APR, the total cost to refinance. But yes, I think so many Americans should be taking a look at refinancing if they're in a financial position to do so. Great point, Jennifer.
Craig, I'm curious about paying. How do you pay less for a loan?
Well, you know what? One of the things you can always do, I remind people, we've got banks, different lenders, and in America, there exists this entity called a credit union. And again, with a credit union, not always, but with some frequency, if you can find a good credit union that you are eligible to become a member of, you might be saving as much as 1% of APR on any standard loan packages that you could otherwise get. So take a look at your local credit union and let's see if we can save some money together.
That is Craig Bolanos, founding partner and chief executive officer, Wealth Management Group, Inverness and Downers Grove. Join us at this time tomorrow for Technology Thursday, and still to come, why it's become harder to get a credit card.
Discussing the news affecting your money. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The economic downturn is impacting the credit card industry and how willing companies are to extend credit. We're joined by Ted Rossman, industry analyst, creditcards.com in New York. And Ted, is this really a good time to apply for a credit card?
Hi, Jennifer. Unfortunately, it's really not the best time for most people to apply. Lenders are really nervous. We've seen substantial pullbacks. For example, according to Equifax, the most recent data on credit card originations was from the middle of May. And back then, there were about 60% fewer credit cards originated that week versus what we typically saw in 2019. So there's really been a substantial pullback.
What are some of the tactics that the credit card companies have used to make sure they keep things in check?
They've really slashed across the board. So they've really cut back on marketing. For example, Mintel has data that says that credit card offers that were mailed in May were down by about 3/4 versus what we saw in February. So they're not marketing as aggressively. They're not courting new customers, not approving many of them. And they've even pulled back on some of their existing customers' credit lines. So it's definitely an anxious time. That said, if you have a good credit score and a steady income, you still have a chance. And for those new customers that do get approved, a lot of times the sign-up bonus spending threshold has been doubled from 3 months to 6 months. So it's really a subset who can actually get a card these days. But if you can, there are some breaks in your favor.
Ted, you mentioned a good credit score. What is considered good by the companies these days?
We used to say that anything above 670, let's say, was good, and anything above 740 was excellent. And I say used to say, you know, that was as recently as probably February or early March. I think the rules have changed here. I think nowadays you probably need a credit score of at least 700 to get approved for most cards, if not 740. You know, in many cases, they really are looking for only the most creditworthy borrowers. They're looking for steady incomes. Where this hurts people the most is on balance transfer cards, because 4 or 5 months ago, you could have gotten a 0% balance transfer card with a 670 credit score. Right now, that's almost impossible because this is a group that by definition has debt. Unfortunately, there's demand. There's just not really supply for that right now.
Has the pandemic affected delinquencies and defaults and how companies handle them, how they go after the money?
What's interesting is that despite all the fears, we really have not seen delinquencies and defaults spike in any noticeable way so far. Some of that, I think, is the stimulus programs that have really helped and getting cash to people, including the expanded unemployment benefits. Some of it are the hardship programs that lenders have rolled out. There's a fear, though, that maybe these delinquencies were delayed, not totally avoided. So we're not out of the woods yet, but so far, so good on that front.
And what does the industry need to see or want to see before loosening some of the restrictions?
I think they definitely want to see a stabilization of the jobs picture. You know, they really want to see unemployment go down. The thing is that a lot of the time, the unemployment rate really mirrors the eventual charge-off rate, you know, credit card bills that are completely unpaid. That's what happened during the Great Recession, when we saw more than 10.5% of credit card bills go completely unpaid. Right now, with the unemployment rate even higher than that, the fear was that charge-offs would go higher. It hasn't happened yet, but they're closely watching the job market. And same thing for consumer spending. In much of the spring, credit card spending was down 30 to 40%. Of late, it's down more like 10% year over year. So it's better, but it's still not great.
Ted Rossman, industry analyst with creditcards.com in New York. Thanks for joining us. And if you missed any part of today's show, you can go to our stream and just skip back to the time you want. There's a pause and rewind function that works both online and with the radio.com app.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.